The following views and opinions do not necessarily reflect those of Talk 1230 WYTS, its staff, management, or parent company, Clear Channel. Listeners should not use Dr. Kvitko's comments and advice in place of receiving an actual dental exam. Time now for Dentally Speaking on Talk 1230 WYTS with Dr. Brian Kvitko. Call 821-1230. That's 821-1230 to discuss your dental issues. Now here's Dr. Kvitko on Talk 1230 WYTS.
Talk 1230 WYTS. Welcome to Dentally Speaking with Dr. Kvitko. Also known as everything you've always wanted to know about dentistry, but were too numb to ask. Hello, I'm General Dentist Dr. Brian Kvitko. Good morning. Thank you for joining me this Sunday morning. Today we're going to be talking about the history of dentistry. We're going to trace back dentistry to its origins way back into 5,000 years B.C. and try to cover everything on up through today, which means there are a lot of things to cover. And but I think it'll be fun. I think it'll be interesting. And but before we do, I want to give out Dr. Kvitko's question of the day. And our question of the day this week is, what percent of general dentists do not offer dentures as one of their services? Meaning, if you went there for dentures, they would have to send you elsewhere or maybe choose to send you elsewhere. All right? So what percent of general dentists do not offer dentures as one of their services? And you can call in your guesses, and keep in mind you can also call in with just regular dental questions to this number, 821-1230. All right, so feel free to pick up the phone, give us a call, give us your guess, and if you'd like, or if you prefer, you can send us an email, and you do that by emailing dentallyspeaking on talk1230@yahoo.com. And we'll get that email, and we'll be happy to answer your question on the air or give your guess on the air. All right. Now, also, a couple things going on that I want you to know about. One is this coming Saturday and Sunday is the NBC4 Health and Lifestyle Expo. And I'd like to invite people to come out. I will be there with a booth. I will be partly sponsoring the runway for the fashion show, which I know maybe doesn't make sense. Maybe you're wondering why I'm involved in that, but the reason is because it's a health and lifestyle expo, and we are part of the lifestyle portion, because to me, healthy teeth and a beautiful smile are a lifestyle. They create this aura. They give people a chance to go out and live life and love life and smile out loud, if you will. All right? So, feel free to stop by and see us. It is at the Columbus Convention Center, Exhibit Hall C. And on September 13th, which is Saturday, it goes from 10 a.m. till 5. And on September 14th, from 11 till 5. Now, September 13th is also the OSU-USC game, but that's a night game. So you can come out, check it out. And also, I want people to know, that on each day, there's going to be an ambush makeover. And I have been asked to be a part of that. So we'll be doing either a teeth whitening, or we'll be doing some kind of if I can do a cosmetic makeover that I can accomplish in a couple hours and still have the person done in time for the reveal, then that's what we will be doing. And also, I'm going to give away some free tickets to the expo. So, actually, you know what? I'm confusing. This one is free. Forget I said that. This one is free. There's one I'm going to be talking about in a minute, which I'll have some free tickets to. All right, so anyway, remember, that's September 13th and 14th. Coming right up. Now, on September 28th at Crew Stadium is the Buddy Walk. The Buddy Walk is sponsored by the Down Syndrome Association of Central Ohio. And we have a team called Libby's Tooth Buds. And if you go to www.dsaco.net, that's the Down Syndrome Association of Central Ohio's website, and click on the information about the Buddy Walk. It says 2008 goal or something like that, talking about how much they've raised. Type in the word Libby or Libby's, no apostrophe, into the search for a team, and ours comes up. And if you'd like to make a donation in the name of Libby's Tooth Buds, that would be wonderful, be much appreciated. The money we raised at our golf outing a few weeks ago has not been registered yet, so it looks like we've not raised much, but we'll have about $1,400 to add to that tally, and our goal is $2,000, so it'd be wonderful if people would do that. And, you know, with I don't know who's going to win the election, and I don't think anyone does, but with Governor Sarah Palin as John McCain's running mate, you might already know that her youngest child, an infant son, is a person who happens to have Down syndrome. And in her speech, which I did catch, she said that should her and John McCain win, that people with special needs children will have a friend in the White House. And I personally think that's really cool. And but we'll just have to see how the election comes out. Now, the other thing I wanted you to know about, the other expo, if you will, that is coming up is December, I think it's December 5th and 6th, but let me just double check that. 6th and 7th. December 6th and 7th is the Women's Expo, and we will be also partially sponsoring that. That one is at the Celeste Center, which is at the fairgrounds, although now they like to refer to that as the Ohio Exposition Center, but most of us here in Central Ohio still call it the fairgrounds. And for that, I will be sponsoring, and I will have some free tickets, and so I would love to give those away to some of my listeners. So call 821-1230 if you would like to receive free tickets to the Women's Expo coming up December 6th and 7th. Okay, so I think that just about does it for the housekeeping portion of the show. Let me just reiterate the question of the day, though, so that you'll remember. And that is, what percent of general dentists do not offer dentures as one of their services? Okay? And we will get your answers, or your guesses, I mean, and we'll get the answer later on in the show. So, today's topic, as I mentioned, is the history of dentistry. And it's pretty interesting. I think you'll find it interesting. As early as 5000 BC, there's a Sumerian text of this date that describes, quote, toothworms as the cause of dental decay. So, what happens is this person, they found a, you know, I guess it would be remains, don't know if it was a mummy or just remains, but found remains of a lower jaw and a tooth that dated back to 5000 BC, and found that there was this little green wire that had been placed down inside a lower front tooth. And in this text, they describe toothworms. Well, that wire is essentially the very first root canal, and possibly the very first dental treatment, at least that we have been able to discover. Now, the reference to worms is that a tooth nerve looks like a worm if you take it out and hold it up, and it kind of wiggles, it's, you know, kind of fleshy. And what happened was, as we believe at least, is this person had a cavity that went into their nerve, and somebody, I guess the first dentist, pulled that out of there, and it held it up. It looked like a worm, and they put this green wire in there to kill the worm. Obviously, it wasn't a worm, but that's 5,000 years B.C., in 2600 B.C., it says the death of Hesi Rey, an Egyptian scribe, often called the first dentist. So the first dentist, I guess, was 2600 B.C. I'm not sure why the first dentist wouldn't have been whoever put that that wire in. But anyway, I think the reason is an inscription on his tomb includes the title, quote, the greatest of those who deal with teeth and of physicians, end quote. And this is the earliest known reference to a person identified as a dental practitioner. 2600 BC. In 1700, between 1700 and 1550 BC, an Egyptian text, the Ebers Papyrus, refers to the diseases of teeth and various toothache remedies. So we're getting some mention back in 1700 and 1550 BC or between. And then, if we work our way up to 500 to 300 BC, Hippocrates and Aristotle write about dentistry, and they include the eruption pattern of teeth, treating decayed teeth and gum disease, extracting teeth with forceps, and using wires to stabilize loose teeth and fractured jaws. So that's 500 to 300 BC, a 200-year period, and that's a big, big change from just that little wire or actually the reference to diseases of the teeth. Now, in 100 BC, Celsus, a Roman medical writer, writes extensively in his important compendium of medicine on oral hygiene, stabilization of loose teeth, and treatments for toothache, teething pain, and jaw fractures. Now, 100 BC, now we're going to, but then the next thing, the next, I guess, important date is 166 to 201 AD, where the Etruscans practiced dental prosthetics using gold crowns and fixed bridge work. So gold crowns and bridge work have been around somewhere between 166 to 201 AD. That's a long time. Now, you know, it's interesting that they use gold, and we still use gold today. And a lot of people wonder why we use gold today. It's really not a status symbol. It's not a fashion statement, although it is in some ways for some people. But gold is used because, and it was used back then, partly because of its it's easy to melt down, has a relatively low melting temperature. And the neat thing is gold expands and contracts very much like natural teeth, so that if we cement a gold crown on a person's tooth and they bite into pyelo mode, their crown and the rest of their teeth are going to hit the cold ice cream, which oftentimes would be something like 20 degrees. And then within a few, a split second, it's going to hit, say, the hot pie filling, possibly apple or cherry, and that might be something in the neighborhood of 140 degrees. And so there is contraction at first with the cold, quickly followed by expansion. And if you don't have something that expands and contracts a lot like teeth, then you'll break the seal and it won't last. So that's why we still use gold today. And but I'm pretty sure the reason that they used it back then, I don't think they knew anything about expansion and contraction, at least not the detail that we do now, back B.C. in 200 A.D. So it was easily melted. And it's malleable, it's soft, and it can be used in that way. All right, now working our way forward to modern day, 500 to 1000 A.D., which would be during the early Middle Ages in Europe, medicine, surgery, and dentistry were practiced by monks, who happened to be the most educated people of the period. Also, in 700 AD, which is obviously between the 500 and 1000, in China, there's a medical text in China that mentions the use of silver paste, a type of amalgam. So amalgam, or silver fillings, to the best of our knowledge, goes back to the year 700 AD and was first mentioned in China. Now, we're going to continue to work our way through to modern day, and as you can tell, there's a lot to cover. I think this is pretty cool. I think it's really neat to look back and see how these things evolved. And so, but we do have to go to a break. Remember, you can call in your guesses to our question of the day to 821-1230 or send us an email to dentallyspeakingontalk1230@yahoo.com. You're listening to Dentally Speaking with Dr. Kavitko, and we'll be right back. Talk 1230 WYTS. You're listening to Dentally Speaking with Dr. Kavitko. Thanks for joining me this morning on this great Sunday morning. And our question of the day today is, what percent of general dentists do not provide dentures as one of their services? And over the break, we received an email from Michael in Hilliard. And Michael said that his guess is 20%. And thank you, Michael, for that guess. It's not correct, but sure do appreciate it. And remember that today, callers can call in and receive a free admission to the Women's Expo, December 6th and 7th at the Columbus Conventions, at the Fairgrounds. The Ohio Exposition Center is how it is now known. All right, so what we're talking about today is the history of dentistry. And right before the break, we left off with the fact that it was 700 AD when a medical text in China first mentions the use of silver paste, which we now believe was a type of amalgam or silver filling like we use. And I've actually seen a picture of a jade inlay, a Mayan jade inlay in an ant in a front tooth that was put in around 900 A.D. All right, moving forward now. Between the years 1130 and 1167 A.D., of course, everything from now on is A.D., a series of papal edicts prohibit monks from performing any type of surgery, bloodletting, or tooth extraction. Now, up until this point, the monks were the most educated, and they were the ones that were practicing medicine and dentistry, surgery, and so on. And then the Pope came out and said, you can't do that anymore. Well, as it turns out, barbers often assisted monks when they were doing their surgical ministry, because they were visiting monasteries to shave the heads of the monks, and so the tools of the barbering trade were sharp knives and razors, happened to be useful for surgery. So after these papal edicts, barbers assumed the monks' surgical duties, which included bloodletting, lancing abscesses, extracting teeth, etc. So I guess we've all heard of the barber surgeons. In 1210, which was another, 50-some years after the last period there, a guild of barbers is established in France. Barbers eventually evolve into two groups: surgeons who were educated and trained to perform complex surgical operations, and lay barbers or barber surgeons who performed more routine hygienic services, including shaving, bleeding, and tooth extraction. So that there is apparently the beginning of dentistry, or the separation of dentists to physicians. Now, in the 1400s, a series of royal decrees in France prohibit lay barbers from practicing all surgical procedures except bleeding, cupping, leeching, and extracting teeth. And I don't even know what cupping is. I guess I should have looked it up, but now it's 1400, and so now what we're doing is we're getting that more of a distinction between, I guess, a surgical barber, if you will, and a lay barber. So, all right, in 1530, the little medicinal book for all kinds of diseases and infirmities of the teeth, written by Artzeny Buchlein, was the first book devoted entirely to dentistry. It's published in Germany, and it was written for barbers and surgeons who treat the mouth. It covered practical topics such as oral hygiene, tooth extraction, drilling teeth, and placement of gold fillings. So that was in 1530 in Germany. 1575 in France, Ambrose Pare, known as the father of surgery, publishes his complete works. This includes practical information about dentistry such as tooth extraction and the treatment of tooth decay and jaw fractures. So you can see that dentistry kind of evolved then somewhere between 1210 and 1530. All right. I think that, and in fact, honestly, the barber surgeons were, I guess you just think of it as a, you know, you have the chair. I mean, think about it. Our dental chairs look similar to a barber chair. At least they did until dentistry switched to sit down, where the dentist would sit down, and the bar used to be the dentist would stand. Person was in an upright chair, and a barber chair then was much like a dental chair, and it was you know, very accommodating to just say, "Well, I'm here to get my hair cut. Can you take out that tooth?" So, all right, now moving forward from those early times, we start getting into something that would be, well, I'm sorry, we go from that to Middle Ages, and from that we're going to work forward to the 18th and 19th and even the 20th century. So, all right, now, remember, you can call in your guesses to our question at 821-1230, and send us an email to dentallyspeakingontalk1230@yahoo.com, and today, a caller will receive free tickets to the Women's Expo, that is December 6th and 7th, and at the fairgrounds. All right. Now, we have to take another break, When we come back, we'll continue moving forward through time and talking here about the history of dentistry. You'll be right back. Talk 1230 WYTS. You're listening to Dentally Speaking here with Dr. Kavitko. Thank you for tuning in. And we're talking about the history of dentistry. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to fast forward a little bit because I want to make sure we have plenty of time to cover everything. And then at this time, I might go back. But anyway, what we want to do is talk about things like the history of the toothbrush and toothpaste and dental floss and toothpicks. And so here we go. Now, by definition, a dentistry is a branch of medicine that involves diagnosis, prevention, and treatment of any disease that concerns the teeth, oral cavity, or associated structures. As far as a toothbrush is concerned, the natural bristle brushes were invented by the ancient Chinese, who made toothbrushes with bristles from the necks of cold climate pigs. French dentists were the first Europeans to promote the use of toothbrushes in the 17th and early 18th centuries. A guy by the name of William Addis of Clerkenwell, England, created the first mass-produced toothbrush. The first American to patent a toothbrush was H.N. Wadsworth, and many American companies began mass-producing toothbrushes after 1885. The prophylactic brush, made by the Florence Manufacturing Company in Massachusetts, was one example of an early American-made toothbrush. That same company, the Florence Manufacturing Company, was also the first to sell toothbrushes packaged in boxes. And in 1938, DuPont manufactured the first nylon bristle toothbrushes. Now, it's hard to believe, but most Americans did not brush their teeth until Army soldiers brought their enforced habits of toothbrushing back home after World War II. Prior to World War II, there just wasn't a lot of toothbrushing going on, but the military was very emphatic that their soldiers have good hygiene. They do everything they can to keep them healthy, because someone who is hiding from the enemy in pain and who possibly would have to yell out or scream out in pain, might get them killed, actually. The first real electric toothbrush was produced in 1939 and developed in Switzerland in 1960. Squibb marketed the first American electrical toothbrush in the U.S. called Broxident. And GE introduced a rechargeable cordless toothbrush in 1961. And then in 1987... Interplaque was the first rotary-action electrical toothbrush for home use. Let's cover toothpaste. Toothpaste was used as long ago as 500 BC in both China and India. And however, you know, modern toothpastes were developed in the 1800s, though. In 1824, a dentist named Peabody was the first person to add soap to toothpaste, and John Harris first added chalk as an ingredient to toothpaste in the 1850s. I didn't even know there was chalk in toothpaste. In 1873, Colgate mass-produced the first toothpaste in a jar. And then 1892, Dr. Washington Sheffield of Connecticut manufactured toothpaste into a collapsible tube. So that was 1892 the collapsible tube first came about. His toothpaste was called Dr. Sheffield's Creamed Dentifrice. Then in 1896, Colgate Dental Cream was packaged in collapsible tubes imitating Sheffield. Advancements in synthetic detergents made after World War II allowed for the replacement of the soap used in toothpastes with emulsifying agents such as sodium lauryl sulfate and sodium ricinolate. And then a few years later, Colgate started to add fluoride to the toothpaste. So fluoride was added back in, just before the turn of the century, from 1800 to 1900. Keep forgetting we're in the 2000s now. All right, dental floss. Dental floss is an ancient invention. Researchers have found that dental floss and toothpick grooves in the teeth of prehistoric humans. So they found these grooves in the teeth, and just from that feel that humans must have been using toothpicks or must have been using dental floss. Levi Speer Parmley, a New Orleans dentist, is credited as being the inventor of modern dental floss. Or maybe the term reinventor would be more accurate, because as we just heard, researchers think that it was being used in prehistoric humans. Parmley promoted tooth flossing with a piece of silk thread in 1815. In 1882, the Codman and Shirtlift Company of Randolph, Massachusetts, started to mass-produce unwaxed silk floss for commercial home use. The Johnson & Johnson Company of New Brunswick, New Jersey, were the first to patent dental floss in 1898. And then Dr. Charles C. Bass developed nylon floss as a replacement for silk floss during World War II, and Dr. Bass was also responsible for making teeth flossing an important part of dental hygiene. Now, toothpicks. In 1872, Silas Noble and J.P. Cooley patented the first toothpick manufacturing machine. And you know, I'm one of these people that I wonder how things are made. I mean, I wonder who picks the sesame seeds that go on our bun and how they grow and all that. Interesting things like that, at least to me. And I was looking at a toothpick the other day and I thought, you know, this is perfectly machined. They're all the same size. And we kind of take them for granted. I know it's easy to do that. But if you're ever in need of a toothpick and can't find one, it can be pretty annoying. And I've thought about what we would use if we didn't have toothpicks. I guess in days gone by, possibly somebody could have used a fingernail piece that was either bitten or torn off that they could have used for that. Not the best thing to use, but I have known of people using that. You just wonder if you're stranded on a desert island, or a deserted island, I mean, what would you use for some of these things? Many of you have seen the movie Castaway with Tom Hanks, and where he's on this island all by himself and develops this raging toothache, and he feels the need to extract his own tooth, and he takes an ice skate. Now you have to remember, in Castaway he was on a jet that was carrying a bunch of FedEx packages, and so as these packages washed ashore, he gathered them up looking to see if there was anything that would help him in his survival, and the closest thing he could find to something that would help him do dentistry was the pointy part, the pick of an ice skate. Not a very, very pleasant picture to have in your mind. And honestly, for those of you that saw the movie, he didn't really extract his tooth using that. It'd be impossible to do that. They just kind of implied that that would work, and I can promise you it wouldn't. All right, now dental fillings and dental amalgam. Cavities are holes in our teeth created by wear, tear, and decay of tooth enamel. And dental cavities have been filled or repaired with a variety of materials, including stone chips, turpentine resin, gums, and metals. I'm sorry, gums, like, I don't mean your own gums. That would be like xanthan gum, or, you know, like things that grow on trees or from trees. In 1848, a gentleman by the name of Arculanus was the first person to recommend gold leaf fillings. Now, gold leaf is really, really thin gold. It's you know, paper thin, even less. It'll blow away in a breeze. But the neat thing is because it's so thin, it's malleable, and you can then roll it into and push it into shapes, into a hole in a tooth. And in fact, we did gold foils in this country. Some people still do, very rarely though. But as recently as maybe in the 1960s and 70s in this country, gold foil restorations were still pretty common. We are up against another break. So when we come back, we're going to continue this discussion about the history of dentistry. And keep in mind, you can call in your guesses at 821-1230. And the question of the day is, what percent of dentists, if you go there, general dentists, would not be able to provide dentures to you if that's what you were seeking? We'll be right back. Smile, please stay for a while now. Just take your time wherever you go. Welcome back. You're listening to Dentally Speaking with Dr. Kavitko. Good morning, and thank you for joining me. Today we're talking about the history of dentistry. And we left off with the... basically, we wanted to make sure we covered some of the more modern-day things like toothpicks and dental floss and toothpaste. And then we were starting to talk about fillings, talked about gold leaf. Well, the next thing, French dentists were the first to mix mercury with various metals and plug the mixture into cavities and teeth. Those first mixtures that were developed in the early 1800s had relatively little mercury in them, but they had to be heated to get the metals to bind together. In 1819, a man named Bell in England developed an amalgam mix with much more mercury in it, and that bound to metals at room temperature. A gentleman named Travaux in France developed a similar mixture in 1826. So silver amalgam as we know it today was developed in somewhere between 1819 and 1826. The dental chair in 1848 was patented by Waldo Hanchett. And the dentist's drill, on January 26, 1875, George Green patented the first electric dental drill. False teeth. False teeth date back as far as 700 BC. The Etruscans designed false teeth out of ivory and bone that were secured into the mouth by gold bridge work. And moving on to Novocaine. There is historical evidence that the ancient Chinese used acupuncture around 2700 BC to treat the pain associated with tooth decay. The first local anesthetic used in dentistry was cocaine, which was introduced by Carl Kohler, who lived from 1857 to 1944, and he did this in 1844. Researchers soon began working on a non-addictive substitute for cocaine, and as a result, German chemists Alfred Einkorn introduced Novocaine in 1905. So Alfred Einkorn is credited with introducing Novocaine. Now, he was researching an easy-to-use and safe local anesthetic to use on soldiers during wartime. He refined the chemical procaine until it was more effective and named the new product Novocaine. Novocaine never really became popular for military use. However, it did become popular as an anesthetic among dentists. And in 1846, Dr. William Morton, a Massachusetts dentist, was the first dentist to use anesthesia for a tooth extraction. And then one more here, orthodontics. Orthodontics did not really exist until the 1880s. And, I mean, as you're seeing here, a lot of dentistry evolved and a lot of patents and a lot of things really started to pick up steam. Because prior to this, you know, our discussion was on ancient origins, Middle Ages, and Renaissance. But then in the 18th century, a lot of things started coming forth. Now, the development of the profession in the 18th century. Let's go to 1723. Pierre Fouchard, a French surgeon, published The Surgeon Dentist, a treatise on teeth. And he is credited as being the father of modern dentistry because his book was the first to describe a comprehensive system for the practice of dentistry, including basic oral anatomy and function, operative and restorative techniques, and denture construction. 1746, what was that, just 23 years later, a gentleman by the name of Claude Mouton described a gold crown and post to be retained in the root canal. He also recommends white enameling for gold crowns for a more aesthetic appearance. So the modern-day post and core, which is something we put in a tooth that has broken off, where we've done a root canal and we need the support, dates back to 1746. The earliest medically trained dentist to practice in America is a gentleman by the name of Dr. John Baker. In 1760, he came to this country from England. The first native-born American dentist, Isaac Greenwood, and that was in between 1760 and 1780. Now, I don't know if a lot of people realize this or remember, but Paul Revere was a dentist. And in 1768 through 1770, Paul Revere places advertisements in a Boston newspaper offering his services as a dentist. In 1776, in the first known case of post-mortem dental forensics, Paul Revere verifies the death of his friend, Dr. Joseph Warren, in the Battle of Breed's Hill, when he identifies the bridge that he constructed for Mr. Warren. So, there you go. Dental forensics could be traced back to Paul Revere, and it was 1776. And that's pretty cool, because I don't think a lot of people even realize Paul Revere was a dentist, and I didn't even realize until lately that he was essentially the first one to practice forensic dentistry. Frenchman Nicolas Dubois de Chaumont receives the first patent for porcelain teeth in 1789. And in 1790, John Greenwood, son of Isaac Greenwood and one of George Washington's dentists, constructs the first known dental foot engine. He adapts his mother's foot treadle spinning wheel to rotate a drill. Did you realize that dentists used to have to pump the drill just like one of those pump sewing machines? We've come a long way, haven't we? All right, now we're up against another break. We need to go to break. When we come back, we're going to go over a couple more guesses for our question of the day, and we'll go ahead and give you the answer to the question of the day. You're listening to Dentally Speaking with Dr. Kvitko. We'll be right back. Talk 1230 WYTS. You're listening to Dentally Speaking with Dr. Kvitko, also known as everything you've always wanted to know about dentistry, but were too numb to ask. And today we're talking about the history of dentistry. We traced it from ancient times to Middle Ages and Renaissance times, and then the 18th century, which we are almost complete with. have almost completed, and we'll be getting to the 19th century here soon. But because we're going to be running short here of time, I wanted to give a couple more guesses that came in over the breaks, both phone and email, for our question of the day. Terry sent in a guess of 15% for our question of the day. Joseph called in a guess of 31%. And the question of the day, for those of you that don't remember, is what percent of dentists do not offer dentures as one of their services? And that would mean they'd have to either refer you because they don't do them, don't want to do them, or maybe feel they couldn't do them, but whatever reason, they would not make you dentures. Well, the answer to that survey is 6%. So you can turn that around and say 94% of dental offices provide dentures for people who walk in the door. That's a pretty high percentage. And honestly, I wish that were lower, because, the 94% number. Because I think if dentistry had never developed, discovered, created, whatever, a way to make dentures, people would be more concerned about saving their teeth. And to this day, I still get shivers sometimes when somebody comes in and says, just take all my teeth out and make me dentures. Because that's not the best way to go. On the other hand, for those who need them, we do make dentures at my office. We do a nice job, and for some people, it is the service that they need. So anyway, okay, just one more thing in the 18th century, and that is also 1790. You might remember I said before the break that John Greenwood was the first to create a dental foot engine, and it was constructed from a foot pedal, just like a sewing machine. Also in 1790, Josiah Flagg, who was a prominent American dentist, constructed the very first dental chair, made specifically for dental patients. He attached an adjustable headrest and put an arm extension to hold instruments onto a wooden Windsor chair. So that now takes us up through the 18th century, and time to move on to the 19th century. At the very turn of the century, in 1801, Richard Skinner wrote The Treatise on Human Teeth, the first dental book published in America. 1801 was the first dental book published in America, called Treatise on the Human Teeth. In 1825, Samuel Stockton begins commercial manufacture of porcelain teeth. His S.S. White Dental Manufacturing Company establishes and dominates the dental supply market throughout the 19th century. And honestly, I believe we still buy teeth from that company for our dentures and our partials, even in 2008. In 1832, James Snell invents the first reclining dental chair. Okay? And then 1833 to 1850, the Crockhorst, two brothers from France, introduced amalgam filling material in the United States under the name Royal Mineral Royal Mineral Succedaneum. The brothers are charlatans whose unscrupulous methods sparked the amalgam wars, a bitter controversy within the dental profession over the use of amalgam fillings. So remember we had talked about how amalgam came out, and at first they had to heat it to get these metals to bind, and later they discovered if you added mercury it would bind at room temperature. So that was the beginning, 1833, of the amalgam debate, the great amalgam debate. And that sound in the background is telling me that I'm out of time, and so what we'll probably do is continue this topic, the history of dentistry, moving from the 19th century on up to today. We did cover some of the topics from today, like toothpicks and so on, but what we'll do is we'll continue this and get all this information out there. Thank you for listening today. You're listening to Dentally Speaking with Dr. Kvitko here on Talk 1230 WYTS.